going.
And a podcast.
Faithful viewers, listeners, have a listen to that.
Big podcast.
Potter Who Cast.
I'm so sorry.
What a clumsy clod you are, Miss Smith. You're one of our country's most famously shrewd journalists is, apparently, such a lovable scatterbrain.
Well, Miss Marsh. Miss Smith, what else do you want to know?
Can you just hold this for a second?
No, I don't touch things because I don't exist. I'm a figment of your imagination.
What? Are you sure?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm sure. I'm being controlled by a very wacky set of aliens.
Mm-hmm. Legally distinct Jawas. Yeah.
And from the moment they revealed, you're gonna be like, why weren't they caught earlier? Because suddenly it's as if they're really bad at this.
Mm.
5 seconds ago, they weren't. Anyway.
Well,
happy to be here.
Last time. Sarah Jane?
The last Sarah Jane.
And you wouldn't know it from the ending.
You really wouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of wouldn't. Yeah, it's like one of the few moments where I was like, huh. Because Sky has this thing where you can really tell that they're using every footage they have, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
With this one, it's different where I was like, oh, the pace is good. Oh, the writing is good. Oh, the characters are good. Really, there's only one big problem with this episode, or two in my opinion. One being the whole, I think there's this thing where Sky, when she shows up and she's like, oh, Luke. Oh, wait, I'm getting to the episode. You should tell the listeners what the episode is about first.
I keep calling it The Man Who Isn't There, but that's the Coen Brothers. The Man Who Never Was. 17th and 18th of October, 2011. From the pen of Garth Rowers.
Don't know who that is.
Well, one of his good friends in his current cause is in this song. And guest starring James Dreyfuss as Harrison, Mark Aitken as Surf, Dan Starkey as Plark, Edita Budnick as Adriana, and Pierre Bowles as Lionel Carson. And of course Dreyfuss. Dreyfuss was playing the first master and all the Big Finish stuff with like David Bradley and stuff like that, you know. And then he started getting a little bit transphobic online, and that turned into a lot transphobic. And now he's being like, oh, they cancelled me and they sacked me for speaking the truth.
Wait, hold on. The guy who played Harrison was playing the master.
Yeah, in Big
Is that what you're telling me? That's bad. He's not good. No offense.
He's really bad. We'll talk. Aitken was, he's like a Northern Irish lad who's a really weird career because he's like in a lot of CSI stuff, and then he's just in a lot of British stuff as well. So he's kind of like hopping on a plane to record like 5 episodes of CSI Miami and then hopping back to record like Casualty. Starkey's obviously doing Strax at this point, so it's like, you know, he's
kind of... Who's Starkey in this episode?
He's the only Jawa guy that talks and does stuff.
Oh, okay.
He's
Yogurt.
Yeah. Budnick as Adriana, she's in 9 episodes of hit TV show Ted Lasso as...
That one is so weird. Why does she keep saying the little people? Is this supposed to be like a... is this supposed to be a thing where she's like has a vocal tic? Because she keeps saying we have to rescue the little people. And I'm like, stop calling them little people. Just
I think it's either that or they're trying to do some commentary that Robert isn't capable of doing as I crack open a cold one. But she's in season 2 of Ted Lasso. I didn't watch it, but she's in like 9 episodes. And Peter Bowles is like this British TV legend. He's in stuff like The Irish or M, Rumpel of the Bailey, To the Manor Born, Only When I Laugh. I think the titles that sounded the most like stereotypical British. But yeah, for the final time, synopsis time. I'm just like, if you can't tell, it's been a fraught evening. There's been a new laptop. There's been a new laptop, believe it or not, called the Surfboard, and everyone wants one. Clyde and Randy especially, but Sarah Jane's been invited to the launch, so she goes with two people, Sky obviously, and Luke, who's come back from university. And they found that Surf is like a hologram and he glitches out, and they found that his FP or whatever, Harrison, has bought aliens off the black market to control a hologram of Surf while they sell a surfboard, which is cheap mass produced stuff, and then they're going to rake in the profit or something. I don't know. Anyway, they contact the alien's homeworld and they send a ship, and Harrison gets sucked into the ship and he just kind of disappears. There's meant to be like implied conflict between Luke and Sky over Sky having Luke's bedroom, but doesn't really get explored at all.
Yeah, it's Sky. That's what I was going to say. Sky, when she comes in, she's like, I hope Luke likes me. And I'm like, why would he not? And the whole time they have this very vague conflict over their room, and it doesn't work the way intended, because you never really know why she's acting this way. But also the way she acts is never like that negative towards Luke. So I don't know. It's just the most like, I guess we don't like each other, but I guess we like each other now.
Then speaking of things that are normal and definitely developed and not all cobbled together, Sarah Jane talks about getting a family over a montage of previous adventures, and then that's the end, but the story goes on. I find this one to be so bizarre in a way that just feels like I don't even know what. I said earlier on, I feel like everyone got day drunk before they filmed their scenes, especially Harrison and especially the guy playing Surf. They both feel like...
Well, there's... The first part of this story feels like an appropriately creepy, a little bit of a old man waving at the cloud, waving, shaking fist at cloud. Damn kids with their technology. And technology means nothing, but technology is so stupid that you can get excited over nothing, blah, blah, blah. And then they reveal that he's being controlled by the Jawas, and he suddenly turns into a comedic character. And Harrison is like, I am evil. I like slavery. And Sarah Jane is like, I can't believe you like slavery. And he's like, yes, I do. I like it, and I want to make more slaves. And the whole second part is just like, I can't believe he wants to have alien slaves. I do. And then eventually they get that pen from his hand. They get the pen, they go back into the fucking presentation room instead of leaving, which is what they should have done with the fucking pen. And then they're like, oh, we gotta like fucking distract Harrison for long enough. He can't realize that the aliens have escaped. So let's have him act like a complete idiot to a level where I'm like, this is so different from like how he was acting just 35 minutes ago in the commercial behind him, you know? Like, it's robotic and creepy, but this is, like, insane. And then Sky maybe goes a little bit, says something shouldn't have said, when Luke is like, he's American. And then she goes, oh yee-haw! And she says, cotton picking, which I'm like, yikes. So, and then Luke is like, oh, you're watching too much Toy Story again. It's like, what? Where in Toy Story? Like, where in Toy Story did Woody go cotton picking about anything anyway?
Well, there's a lot of stuff in this where it's like, where is this coming from? I'll give you some examples. I had to like pause it when it happened. Luke takes out like a dog whistle. I'm like, they're not going to bring Kanan into this because Kanan's off in Australia doing his own thing. And then Luke's like, if I blow this, Kanan will come and help us. I'm like, why are you doing this? Because you're not like, it's like you're setting up a Kanan appearance to save the day when Kanan's not going to show up. Sarah Jane, for some reason, is now doing tech reviews, which is like, I guess she probably got the tickets because she was like, this is my kid really loves laptop. And they're like, say no more, miss. Say no more. We'll get her a laptop.
I mean, the rehearsal thing at the start is really insane. The only journalists they called over were Sarah Jane and this guy who hates computers.
Old pervert who's been drinking all afternoon.
Yeah.
Who, says, let me drink you in as lovely as ever. And then he goes like, ha, ha, ha. Other things I liked before we get into the kind of nitty-gritty is like, Joseph Cerf, if you're familiar with him, the famous billionaire who disappeared somehow for like 2 years and then he comes back and no one really cares to find out where he went or whatever. His chair in that interview scene, the really, really weird interview scene where she's like, you know, she's trying to rumble him as a hologram, is an insane chair. Harrison has an insane phone that looks like a big kind of like tube that he has in that one scene.
No, the phone! Why is the phone so big?
He's walking around this massive tube. He's like, hello? No. He's giving like a real kind of weird,
it's not even a tube. It's like a stick. It's a giant
curved
stick.
The curved like banana that he just has with him at all times. He's not very good. He also makes a Mumsnet joke, which is funny because in real life he and Mumsnet would be great pals because Mumsnet is like really transphobic as well. But like, okay. So the thing about this is that it's not very good, but it's very watchable. And the watchable bits are watchable for the same reason that, you know, whatever that guy's name was who went, you disappoint me, Sarah Jean Smith. His bits are, you know, the Beyond the Stars or the Pied Piper, like they're watchable because there's people making a very strange choice in the moment. And here the strange choices seem to just be built around, we need an idea for this moment. And it's the thing, like, for all the kind of talk we do around Gareth Roberts, when he's doing serious stuff, like when he's doing like trickster stuff, I think his stuff is good. It's fine. When he's not, I think his stuff is just completely bizarre and doesn't work. And this is just an example of him like not quite seemingly understanding anything that he's doing. Like it's, like he's writing this thing about, you know, on its head, it's about like, you know, people using slave labor to like manufacture like really low quality mass produced goods to make money, and you're like, okay, I can follow that thread, but it doesn't quite seem to have any kind of resolution beyond like, oh yeah, Harrison will get sucked into the spaceship. It's like, okay, then one, I don't know.
It is such a, like, he gets sucked, and then they're like, I hope they put him to work, and there's just a very brief shot of Sarah Jane going, yay! And it's like,
he'll be a slave.
I want to know what happens to that guy. It's like, I'm kind of worried for him. I mean, I'm not. I kind of want to know. Yeah. I just want to see him die, you know? Like, I feel like that's what you hit the nail on the head. You never get a resolution to that plot. So the most evil man who's like, I feel like it feels like a Torchwood villain with the way that he's just like straightforwardly evil. At least Sarah Jane villains have like one emotional thing that ties them to the plot, even if that emotional thing is like, you know, the trickster being like, I want to get rid of Sarah Jane Smith because she's interrupting my plans. Like, that's an emotional connection. I don't think Seraph or Harrison have an emotional connection to the plot. It's just like, oh my God, get these annoying ass children and their mom out of here. And that's the entire vibe for this villain. Just an annoyed PR guy being like, get out.
Mm-hmm.
Get out.
And like I said, he's just not good. He's doing like a really weird, like, he's got this really weird evil kind of David Mitchell, Ricky Gervais vibe. But he's just also not very good. He's just like, he's not really doing anything other than like twisting a mustache, being like, yes, I love slavery. What about you? which, I mean, I don't know. There's a lot of stuff. Other stuff that feels kind of bizarre is the Clyde and Rani subplot, where it's like they're basically talking to a computer for like 90% of this. There's one of the most bizarre moments of all time where it seems that they're about to make a joke about grab Harrison's penis, and then it ends with pen, and it's like, phew, I thought it was going to say something else. And it's like, where did that come from? You know, it's such a bizarre moment. But their entire thing feels like, I mean, it's obviously like set up for them to, you know, become a couple eventually, but it just feel like they went into this being like, okay, it's going to be Luke and Skye meet for the first time. They're going to have this whole like thing. What do you do with the other two kids? They can spend half an hour hitting a laptop with a hammer or something. I don't know. Let them do that. And then they just don't really have that much stuff to do. I don't know. The legally distinct Jawas, they do something that I love.
It's so funny. Mm. Just like the how everyone everyone has a mask except for the one, yeah.
Clark. Yeah. But he, like, they all have their little jobs, like they all have to, like, that's a fun idea. It's a fun idea.
It's a fun idea. It's weird that it gets used just for the like meet Dave reject jokes. Like it really is so wild. The shift in the tone, building up to the reveal of who's controlling Seraph. Mm-hmm. It is a completely different episode. It's like, what is his deal? And he's so weird. And he's so creepy. And he's this. And then it goes from, he said launch instead of lunch. And I'm like, it's like, really? That's, you are doing so well. I don't know.
Hmm. They, it's something I love where, because like, you know, they've got the one, they can afford the one mask, but they also have to like factor in, how's he going to look at this mask? The nostrils are huge. The nose is like at a place where they actually put in like the effort to make the costumes look alien, but for practical reasons rather than being like, you know, they can look at the little slits and, you know, go about doing their stuff. I don't know. Probably it's Seraph as well. So I feel like we got
it. Also, Seraph is such a funny name to give it's such a like, literally, like, what is the name of your evil company? Oh, it's Evil Inc. You know, like, what is the name of your device that's going to hypnotize everyone? Seraph. Get it? Like, Seraphs?
It's also, like...
Whatever.
At no point did they... Like... You can't just be like, we're going to have this dead billionaire become this one, like we're going to take over this dead billionaire's identity, and you know, we'll push him on as this kind of hologram. It's like one step too far, I think, to kind of land the idea of this thing. And I mean, he's giving it his all, but it is just like, yeah, I don't know. This one is like, it's made up of moments, I think, that are just completely wackadoo, I guess. And coming off of something that was like tonally so, so different and like so much more mature, I think, I guess. To go from like that, go from like, you know, flawed opening where it just doesn't seem they had much to work with to, you know, this high point where, you know, they're all serious and they're all kind of whatever. Then to go to this and for it, like, I think it's obviously not an issue that you can really deem it for that it's the last one. But it really does, I think, suffer from having to be the last one. And I think once they get to the end where, like, you know, Clyde's drawn a drawing, he's done a whole drawing, and he lifts it on the wall, and it's like an A3 sheet where it's like, he might as well not have bothered, guys. He might as well have gotten, like, you know, something else. Clyde's done his drawing or whatever. And then we cut straight into, you know, having a family is great and it is cool. Goodbye. It's like it just suffers from having to be something it didn't or shouldn't have had to be. And as a result, it really does just kind of, I think, crumble under the kind of weight of having to, you know, having to be this like final kind of fun little adventure. And part of me is like, I think they could have just left out the Frankenstein together montage at the end, because like it doesn't do her any favors, because it's so clear, like, even beyond like, the one in like the opening, this one is so clearly cobbled together from different things, like the quality of sound changes halfway through, the pacing of what she's saying changes halfway through. It doesn't really fit like the message or the vibe they're going for. It feels rushed. It feels kind of just like, I don't want to say disrespectful, but it just feels like, you know, it was maybe a step too far to throw that in on top of everything else. Yeah, I don't know.
It's an undeniable effort. I'll say that. It is the second best story of the season. It is a season with three stories, so that's not exactly a high watermark. But it is maybe like, I don't know, there's like some moments where I'm like, I'm really glad that all of this happened in 2011 and not now. Because I think there would have been an urge to cobble something together. I'm surprised Doctor Who has managed to resist the urge of the deepfake for so long.
It really does feel like if they had gotten, because I mean, we're talking about like
if it didn't happen during the Disney era, it's not going to happen.
Yeah,
because that's when they would have had the money to do it, and that's when they would have had the backing to do it, and they chose not to do it. And I think it's admirable because we're the only geek franchise. It's like, I don't think we need to revive old people. To bring back these characters.
You're saying that now, and then like War Between will open with CGI John Pertwee looking at like Sea Devil X, or and then CGI Brigadier walks in, and then they walk out, and then it cuts to like modern day or something.
Don't. Is that actually gonna? Please don't.
No,
don't manifest that.
No, they won't have the money. There's no way they've had the money to do that. Like, they barely have the money to do things. Someone that should be actually in War Between is Adriana. Just throw her in there, being like, you know, because like they have a guy from Children of Earth showing up. Why not someone from The Man Who Never Was? You know, and she can say Little People again. And like, what are you talking about? Says, do you not see Dan Starkey over there? He's here, and he's in his costume. We're like, hi. Like, get rid of Lynx get Adriana in, you know. Sorted. I mean, yeah, I don't.
Yeah, I'm just. I was just watching that final montage, and I was just thinking, you know, about the way Carrie Fisher was treated in Star Wars, the way Harold Ramis was treated in Ghostbusters, and I'm just like, it's a really good thing that we never got that, because I think. I think, like, ultimately, the real, and if I may, like, going to, like, wrapping things up, I'm heading for the lights, and I'm going to turn off the lights in the cheers bar as we walk out. But I think the reason why Surgeon Adventures worked even when it didn't is because Elizabeth Sladen had a natural ability to make all of this seem reasonably grounded, even when it wasn't. So... Mm-hmm. Even when we're going through the most insane situations, Elizabeth Sladen had a way of playing it where she could bring you down back to Earth with just a reaction shot, with just a simple emotional tick or an emotional glimpse into her inner self. And I think because they didn't have, maybe they did, I don't know, it feels like they didn't have the ability to do coverage. Like, again, they're using... There's so many moments in this episode where Sarah Jane's talking, but her face is not on screen. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, I know what happened here probably. But it really took away their biggest weapon, which is the ability to cut to Elizabeth Sladen making a face or cut to Elizabeth Sladen making a different face. They can't do that anymore, so it's a considerably weaker show.
Mm-hmm. And... It is, yeah. It is just like it's. I think the going back to say, like, they haven't ever felt the need to, like, do the CG stuff. I think what helps is that, you know, obviously Tom won't do anything anymore, but, like, Davison.
The first one is like, why would you? Because you don't need to. You could just. Yeah. Knock on whoever's door and be like, hey, do you want to record this? Yeah. And call him and be like, even more of me.
He puts on his fancy Crocs and he starts running to the studio. That's the thing, like, they have those people there that they can call on to, you know, do this stuff. And they don't, like, you know, it would be really easy for them to, like, you know, after Time Crash, be like, if they show up again, we'll just, you know, put a little makeup on them, make them look as young as we can make them. But them being like, oh yeah, when they're together, it short circuits time and they look older, is like, you know, that's all you need. You don't need to be like, you know, we'll put dots onto Sylvester McCoy's face and, like, digitally pull back his skin, or, you know, we'll put a wig on Paul McGann and be like, look, there he is, you know. It's like they're open to just, it's like when the Brigadier shows up, you know, and he's, like, old, and he's, you know, they don't feel the need to be like, okay, well, like, you know, I mean, there is that one shot where he's clearly not, like, it's like a 40-year-old man driving the car. But even then, it's like, they don't feel the need to be like, okay, this is an old guy, what we'll do is we'll give him action scenes, we'll have, like, a stunt double playing for, like, most of it. They're like, no, we'll write around, you know, this guy being old, we'll give him, like, the chance to have that kind of centerpiece. Whereas, like, Star Wars, it's like, okay, we can either cast a new guy to be Luke, or we'll get Mark Hamill AI to, like, say a few words, and we'll, you know, make this guy's face into, like, CG mush that we can mold to. And it's like, you guys can just recast. Like, you don't have to. You shouldn't feel beholden to, you know, holding on to the past. You should be able to be like, you know,
kill it if you have to.
Yeah, it's like, this is a role. This is a character. On this, like, if you're performing like Hamlet, you don't go like, okay, we'll get Laurence Olivier's recorded footage and we'll, you know, map it onto, like, David Tennant or whatever. You know,
it's you like, say you that, but I think we're maybe a couple of years away from someone doing that
holographic Hamlet, like. I don't know, Shea Stadium's gone. It'll be like, yeah. But, like, you know what I mean? Like, it's acting is obviously about playing a role, but it's not about, you know, playing a role when you don't have to play a role and mm-hmm. having, you know, robots basically resurrect you. It's like you can take a step back. And it's why I think it's great that, like, I know we rag on the line a lot of, you know, Mavic Chen, Sarah Jane's dead. I think it's that they gave her the dignity of being like, no, she's gone. And mm-hmm. we're going to give her a moment here. We're not going to like be like, okay, she's actually off in this corner of the world. We'll see her again, but she's there. To give her like that final dignity of like, no, she's gone. We'll pay tribute to her and we'll give her, you know, we'll draw a line under that being like, mm-hmm. you know, her story's over. I think that's way better ultimately than, you know, doing what like a Star Wars would have done and being like, okay, we'll get this person in and we'll map and we'll get like someone in to do this. I mean,
I always think about the fact that like nobody can quote a single line that fake Peter Cushing says in Rogue One. Mm-hmm. But everyone knows that it's fake Peter Cushing.
Yeah. I think the thing about that as well is that the guy who playing him looks
so much like him. Yeah, to the point where mm-hmm. you're like, just let him be. Whatever. People look like other people. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I know the irony of saying all this when Big Finish has Santa likes, but I think it's okay for Sarah Jane because it's obviously it's her daughter in real life, Sadie Miller. So it's like the family are okay with her doing this. And obviously, you know, her daughter gets to kind of look after her legacy that way. Whereas when it's like, you know, John Cole shows out there and like, I'm the Brigadier. It's like, I don't know if you should necessarily be doing this way. But yeah, I don't know. It's sad. I think it is sad. I think, you know, ultimately it was kind of going down a bit, I think. Towards the end, I mean, there was a lot of episodes where like nothing was really happening, or stuff like there's a stuff where it's like, what is any of this? Mm-hmm. But I think it's still sad in the day to just kind of, you know, have this. I think it's sad mostly because it's like a reminder of just the kind of finite nature of life, you know, and all that. And yeah, I mean, that's about it, I think. I don't know. There's nothing. I mean, I did briefly glance at the Goodbye Sarah Jane Smith, or the YouTube special, where
I have no need to see that. Just purely the on the
it's. I understand, like, it's going back to the thing of, like, giving her an underlying full stop ending, but also you don't need to watch people walking up to, like, a phone camera and being like, goodbye, and then Jacob Dunham's like, and then Ronnie walked in, and then, Mr. Smith looked in, whatever, you know, you don't have to acknowledge it, I guess. But yeah. That's it.
Ranking? Should we do ranking really quick? All right, here we go. Yeah. Crescent Card Langer, this one, Sky. That's it. Next.
Yeah.
I think you agree with me, yeah? Don't you? Yeah, absolutely. That's it.
Like, no,
that's all we need. No. Yeah. I would shoot you. There would just be a mm-hmm. bang and you would just hear a sound of you falling. Mm-hmm.
I think that's the thing as well. Just forever that because it's only three episodes, Sky kind of ultimately feels very superfluous, and it's obviously no fault of her own or no fault of
Bryce,
because like they obviously can't do much about that, but ultimately it's like what might have been kind of outweighs, you know, what was, I guess. But yeah, farewell, Sarah Jane.
Bye.
You didn't disappoint me, Sarah Jane Smith. Hi. So you may have seen, you may not have seen, the announcement that this is, for now, the last episode of the Potter Who Cast. In fitting tribute, I'm recording this on my bed. I used to do this from bed. That was really weird. I mean, yeah, it was weird, but that's the thing. 4 years we had. 4 great years, you know? And sometimes you just kind of, you look at the bigger picture and you say, I enjoy doing this for one reason, and that's talking to your friend every month, multiple times, and not because I want to do, or, you know, I want to do, not because I have anything insightful to say surrounding that, you know? And sometimes you gotta realize, okay, maybe this has gone as far as I can go as a, like, creative enterprise, as a form of entertainment, you know? And you gotta step back and say, look, okay, you know, we did four years of this, we, you know, we saw through two spin-offs, there's only two spin-offs, you see there's a third one, I'm gonna kill you. I mean, there's also a class, but, you know, that's not counting to us now, obviously. Or it might be, you know, we might come back, you know. But for now, for the foreseeable future, this is it. And I just want to say, you know, thank you to all the guests we had, even the ones that, you know, I'm joking, there weren't any. Except you, and you know who you are. Thank you to, you know, so many different people within that. Thank you to everyone who listened. I really want to say thank you to, you know, someone who is one of my dearest friends now and wouldn't have been without this. And that's Michelle, who doesn't even know I'm recording this, so what great of a friend I am. But no, it's, without Michelle, there is no anything for me, you know? And that's the truth, you know? And the thing I think out of this for your experience, it was a friend, a dear friend, a best friend. I'm so grateful for that. So, you know, thank you for listening. Thank you for, you know, maybe not listening. Thank you to... this is a petty, dig section. Thank you to /Doctor Who for rejecting our posts about 3 years ago now, 2 years ago, and approving posts like, what if Bryan Cranston played the 12th Doctor? You know, thank you. That was really appreciated at the time. Thank you to Spotify for, pinging us for 3-year-old episodes that had like 15 seconds of licensed stuff in it and telling me, if you're lying about this, you're committing perjury. Okay. Thank you to just everyone, really, you know, Langley Crawford's agent and all that, you know, Goofy's lawyer, Billis Manger, everyone and anything, really, thank you.
I can't believe you forgot me. The Podtour Who Cast robot. I was good too. Wow, I sound different again. Recasting, huh?
And I leave you with this. There are worlds out there where faction paradox is confusing. Where the goof section's alive. Where the goof section is alive. And Professor Rivers dreams. Episodes made of fake live show elements. And cameos made of reused material and robo-fuzz. Somewhere there's K-9. Somewhere there's Langley Crawford. And somewhere else, the pod is getting cast. Come on, Michelle. We've got work to do. We'll be right back.
Potter Who Cast.